America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
They've instead said we don't need the Save America Act because, and this one is a kicker, because it's already against the law. That, Mr. President, under these circumstances, is analogous to saying we don't need a law allowing police to issue citations and monitor traffic at intersections governed by a stop sign, because it's already against the law in our state to run a stop sign. And even though police officers under the status quo are prohibited from monitoring intersections and taking note of when someone runs a stop sign, we know that people don't run stop signs because it's against the law. That is directly, closely, tightly analogous to what they're saying here. We don't need a law making our laws prohibiting non-citizen voting because it's already against the law. And we take that defiant, illogical, absurd position, even knowing that we've made it impossible to detect and therefore prosecute and punish anyone who breaks that law.
That is Senator Mike Lee of Utah, who has been the champion of the Save America Act in the Senate. And this is Wiggins America. Sorry, I'm still a little bit under the weather. We'll see if I get talking, if I, you know, sound a little bit better as we go here. I still feel like I've got a cold, and I definitely have been passing some kidney stones this week. I mentioned this on last week's show, and I don't intend to dwell on it here, but man, I missed a good portion of the week, Monday, Tuesday, and part of Wednesday, just because of kidney stones. And I cannot figure out why I started passing them. Really brief history here. In 2023, the Annie Fry Show, me, Annie, Brad, and at the time Hannah, took a long weekend vacation to one of the most magical places on earth, Disney World. And I love that place. And I love rides. I love experiences like that. So we went and we did 3 hard days where we really didn't sleep a whole lot, and we walked and walked, and I got so dehydrated on that trip without really knowing it that when we came back after those 3 days, I think we had done something like close to 80,000 steps in 3 days. And when we got back, I was so dehydrated that I started getting all this pain, and I didn't know why, and so we came back, did the show the next day. That night, I fell down in the bathroom and just was in so much pain, I thought I was dying. Or I thought at least maybe this is what dying kind of feels like. But I didn't think I was dying. I wasn't really sure. It certainly was painful. And I didn't know why. I just thought maybe my body's shutting down. I'm not sure. And so I eventually got my phone and called I got my wife awake first, but then we called my parents so that they could take me to the emergency room as fast as possible because my wife couldn't leave me because our kids were pretty little. And so I went there and they're like, yeah, you're passing a kidney stone. I'm like, oh, that's what this feels like. Okay. So fast forward, that was May of 23. Now it's almost 3 years later and I haven't really done anything. I know that there's been little bitty ones. I'll feel them every now and then, but it's no big deal. And I haven't had any problems until this year. And all of a sudden, man, it's like in January, I started feeling weird. And in February, I started to realize, oh, I think I'm passing some kidney stones. But they were never that big. And then this week and last week, it got bad. So I'm now trying to figure out what to do and getting CAT scans and all this stuff. And I still don't know the answer. I'm just trying to to roll with it. And some of you guys have written in, and I really appreciate that, explaining that I should take lemon juice with olive oil. I wish I could say your names. I should have brought up all the messages that I got from you guys last weekend. But thank you to those of you who wrote in, whether that was on Twitter, at Radio Wiggins on Twitter, or on Facebook, which is where most of you guys seem to like to contact me. My apologies that when you contact me on Facebook, I don't see it usually for a couple days, because if we're not friends or connected, it doesn't give me a notification until sometimes days afterwards. So if you message me on there even today, this weekend, I may not get back to you until like a couple days. And it's not because I'm trying, it's just because I don't see it. But anyway, long story short, I still don't know exactly what's happening. And I've missed a lot of this week, but I've been following the news. And with the Save America Act, just playing that Mike Lee clip at the beginning there, it's a weird, weird way in which we have shifted the conversation over to election integrity as if it entirely depends on the Save America Act. I have good news for you. It doesn't. It would be good to pass that act, and it would help, and maybe it would solve some problems, but I don't think it would solve all of them. And I don't think that if it doesn't pass, and look, I'm like max pressure, we should pass it. But if it doesn't, I don't think that's the end of the world for election integrity. And let me explain why. But let me do that in the next segment, because I don't want to go super long here. I want to keep this high and tight so that the next one I can really explain where the election integrity battle has shifted so that there are not stolen elections. And I can give you all the receipts, and I can give you a big news item that happened this week that nobody's paying attention to. And no, if you're listening and you heard that and you said, oh, I know what he's talking, I know what he's teasing, I'm not talking about the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court kind of came out of nowhere this week, and it looks like they're going to make Election Day more of Election Day. And that wasn't on anybody's radar. They took a case, and now because of the oral arguments, we're thinking, oh, they're not going to let ballots maybe come in after Election Day anymore. There's more you could do to tighten it up, but it sounds like at least we'd get that out of this ruling, and that was out of nowhere. But I'm not even talking about that. I got a bigger deal to kind of connect some bigger news items together for you in the next segment, so stay here.
America.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
Everywhere I go, I hear people talking about how the deer population is out of control. Well, did you ever think that maybe you should quit talking about it and get out there and start cutting off some deer genitals?
The Grocery List, Food for Thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, I said and teased in the last segment that I was going to explain where the election integrity battle has come and gone and where it is headed. And I'm excited to share with you that this is all related to the confirmation of Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of the, well, he's now the head of the DHS. That's the Department of Homeland Security. I don't know what you think about Kristi Noem. I'm glad she's gone. I'm glad that Mark Wayne Mullen is in there now, and there's a reason. It's not just because he's a big tough guy and he's a definite conservative. It's not just those reasons. It's because of something else. Now, let me connect these dots in a way that hopefully I, as a semi-professional communicator, can do to where by the end you go, oh, wow, I see now. Tie it up in a bow. Start with that news item about Mark Wayne Mullen, and then we go to this. Remember back in September, October, November, especially October, November. If you listen to this show at all, if you don't, it's okay. I've got some messages last week from people who had never heard the show before, and so you're welcome always as well. So I don't expect you to have heard everything, but I will recap. And you can go and see this, because the podcasts are still available if you ever wanted to go check me on this. In October, November, I started talking about that there were whistleblowers coming out of Venezuela who were part of the military and the like tech side of the military in Venezuela, who were saying, look, we've stolen elections. And I don't think that they were doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. I think they were doing it because they're actually patriots of Venezuela. And they knew if we don't ever say anything, this guy Maduro is going to stay in charge forever. And so they started spilling the beans to anybody who would listen, but there were very few people who would listen. I mean, these are two just random guys. And this is also in 2024, mind you, I should say that, when Trump is not in power. This is still the Biden regime in charge of the United States. So they didn't really know who to talk to. So they started reaching out to certain people to explain that they were flipping on their own government and they were going to whistleblow all of how they stole elections in Venezuela. Well, guess what? This isn't just Venezuela that they're talking about. This is the same software that's used all over the place and all over different democracies and different non-democracies that act as democracies. This is the same software and machines that were used to steal elections all over the world. And a lot of this was run through Venezuela, and they were very aware of it, and they were able to share a lot of that. And if you don't believe me, I'm citing the President of the United States as my source. He did not talk about these things publicly in interviews, but he did Truth Social about them a lot. And so you had to pay real close attention because I think he's deliberately being kind of quiet about these things until they have a full case, because you know that the 2020 election is very much on Trump's mind all the time. So those whistleblowers from Venezuela, they came to the United States in 2024. They were, I don't know exactly how, there's a long story about how they got here. But the people that they spoke to in 2024, the reason that they were doing it at that time too is they're like, look, it's going to happen again. It's going to happen this year. They're going to steal the election in America again. This is what they were saying. Now, I can't go into all the details about, you know, because I only know half of it, if that. But I do know that they talked to a few key individuals here within the U.S. government. And again, this is all part of, you can go look and see Trump's Truth Social and see that he was saying this stuff. Indirectly, he was quoting other people who had said it, but he was posting it. That those people, those whistleblowers from Venezuela, they talked to two key U.S. senators at the time. Well, one of them is a former senator, David Perdue of Georgia. The other one, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma. Mark Wayne Mullen has known very early on about stolen elections. And so he is now the head of the Department of Homeland Security. You think that's significant? That is very significant. Very, very. And I am sure, I'm certain that he was chosen partially for that reason. Probably, you know, we keep talking about what's he going to do with ICE and how's he going to handle all that, because that's all the sort of the marquee stuff under the DHS. But I am certain that he was chosen for that reason too, that he was part of this early information that came into the United States from these Venezuelan whistleblowers. Now, you know what happened after that. Now you can see where I tied the bow together. So let me just finish the story. But what happened after that, after they informed those two senators, was that they were then taken to Susie Wiles. Susie Wiles is the chief of staff for Trump. And she is a very, very skeptical person on this kind of stuff. And she saw what they said and said, uh-oh, we got to take this to the president. Took it to Trump. This is all before the 2024 election. Took it to Trump. Took it to Elon Musk and said, see if this is real. Elon Musk walked into the room, said, I don't care what you have to say. I don't care about your PowerPoint presentation. Just give me your thumb drives. Give me your data. He took it and within about 20 minutes came back and said, that's all real. They are going to steal the 2024 election. So there's way more to this about how they ended up stopping it. And it's a fascinating story. It'll all come out. And again, if you think, dang, this is like deep, weird stuff, Ryan, well, I don't really care as long as it's true, which the president has confirmed by retweeting a lot of people saying this stuff back in 2025 at the end of last year. He was retweeting it and truthing it out. And then guess what happened after he did all that? They went and took the president slash dictator of Venezuela. This was all before that happened. And I reference my own podcast because you can go back and hear me talking about this stuff before they went and got Maduro. So when they went and got Maduro, to me, that was huge confirmation that all of this stuff is real and it is playing out in reality, not just in the blogosphere and not just in talkie-talkie. So tying that all to now, they have all this, and I think they have not only those two. I haven't heard much about the whistleblowers in a long time. I think they still have those guys. They're probably in protective custody somewhere. But they also have the president of Venezuela. What do you think he's going to do? They also have his wife, by the way. They have leverage over these people. So they're going to hear everything that they have to say. And the Department of Homeland Security head is Mark Wayne Mullen, who has been there from the beginning. That is important. And that is why I wanted to share that today on Wiggins America. We have a lot more to go. Love your thoughts about this. I think I started the segment by saying, if you ever want to contact me and just ask questions, I mean, I'll answer what I can. I can tell you a little bit more than that, but it's a short form message service. So, keep it brief if you can, but on Facebook, you can contact me on there. Just find Ryan Wiggins, or on Twitter. That's the easiest way, at Radio Wiggins. We'll be right back. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't at least report on the Maduro news from this week after we just talking about him, because there was a little bit of news. It's not big news, but part of it is that Marco Rubio is going to testify against one of his former colleagues and, I guess, roommates who became part of Maduro's circle. It's a weird story. The sitting Secretary of State usually does not testify in a personal matter like that, but he's going to. I don't think he has yet. I think that's still to come. And he was roommates with this guy whose last name I think was Avila back when they were in their 20s. Well, then that guy used his friendship, although they weren't good friends, they were just, you know, roommate friends, used that relationship to curry favor with lots of Latin American leaders. And I don't know how he did that, or like what position he got that he could do that, but he did. And he was part of Maduro's inner circle. And so Rubio is going to testify against his former roommate in that sense. Pretty weird story. Doesn't have a lot to do with this, but the headline here is that U.S. judge has questioned the block on Maduro's use of Venezuelan funds for defense. So again, these things aren't making a huge impact on the overall case. It just slows things down. You know, this is stuff that just happens. And it says that a U.S. judge is questioned on Thursday the U.S. government's justification for blocking ousted Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro from using the South American country's funds to pay for his legal defense against U.S. drug trafficking charges. Basically, Maduro is saying, why can't I use Venezuelan money to pay for my defense here? And U.S. is saying, because you can't. And the judge is saying, maybe he can. But the judge would not dismiss the case on him on that basis. So that's good. The case is going to continue. Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores, wore beige prison garb, both of them, to the hearing in Manhattan at a federal court more than 2 months after U.S. military forces captured them in a surprise raid on Caracas and ferried them to New York. So this isn't a huge development in the story, but it did make some headlines simply because there aren't a lot of developments in this story. What I just told you is the background that's the most important part to know, but everybody's asking, and I've been asking, what's the deal with the Maduro case? Nothing's happening. Well, there was a little bit of news, so there you go. Okay, you want to talk about something else concerning national security? It's not what you think it is. Let me divert real quick and tell you that I think Rand Paul is very underrated. I know he gets a bad rap, but I was just looking through the last couple days of whatever he's tweeting on X and talking about, and a lot of what he's talking about is Fauci. He was really awesome. Not he, as in Fauci. Rand Paul has been awesome pushing back on all the COVID nonsense, because they way overstepped their boundaries constitutionally and got slapped down several times by the Supreme Court. Good for them. But we had to still live through it. That's the problem, is that some of these things, they take so long to go through that we still have to live with the results of them. And now they know it. Like in Illinois, I hesitated to get into some Pritzker tweets from this week, But in Illinois, they will file lawsuits knowing they're going to lose just so they can have the grace period between when they institute a law and when it gets struck down by a higher court. They're just like, well, but we get that amount of time to enforce that law, and therefore you kind of get like a free bonus law. Like, they just make stuff up and do that. It's so immoral, but it doesn't really matter. Because they're doing it anyway. They're going to do it anyway. And they know that the voters of the state will support them in it because it's mainly Chicago. Anyway, I'm saying this about Rand Paul because I was looking through all of the stuff that he has tweeted this week, and the COVID stuff was still there. He's still talking about Fauci, which I don't necessarily want him to move on. It's just that there are a lot of bigger things now that I almost would rather him be talking about. One of those is the SAVE Act. He is very, very in support of the SAVE Act, calling it an 80-20 issue, a no-brainer to be able to secure elections. But here's the big one, and the reason I said this is a national security issue. He tweeted this out, and it's an article from Yahoo Finance that says the Treasury just declared the U.S. insolvent. The media missed it. Now, what is the word insolvent there? Sorry, I just got a text. But what is the word insolvent? Well, it means you're over your skis. You've spent more than you made. Well, in that sense, we've been insolvent for a very long time. But listen to this. We keep going, oh, what's the national debt and all that? Listen to this. $47.78 trillion in liabilities. If you didn't hear that, I'll say it again in like plainer terms instead of having all the points in there. $47 trillion in liabilities. That's the money that we're spending that we don't have coming back in. And then $6 trillion in assets. So that puts you at a little over $41 trillion in debt. I'm not sure how they calculate, because they also say we're not quite to $40 trillion, but we will be very soon in debt. But Rand Paul says his six-penny plan would balance the budget in 5 years. But that would require the government to actually stop spending money it doesn't have. Six-penny plan is going to become a 10-penny plan in a few years. You know what is crazy that he also highlights? The six-penny plan, which is, as I understand it, for lack of a better basic way of describing that plan, it's a just across-the-board 6% cut to everything. Just 6% across every spending everywhere. And he says that would actually balance the budget. He said 4 or 5 years ago, maybe six now if it's we're talking pre-COVID, he introduced a plan that was the same thing. It was called the two-penny plan. 2% cut across the board, across everything. That would have been very easy to absorb, and nobody in Congress would do it. And we are going to go bankrupt. I don't know what it looks like. If you have some sort of crystal ball that shows exactly how this plays out, I would love to know, or some sort of prophecy that would let us know exactly what it looks like for the leading economy on earth to go bankrupt and not be able to get out of a death spiral where it just pays everything you're paying is just going to pay off interest on debt and nothing is ever paid off. And so it just gets worse and worse and worse and you just implode. That is where we're headed, because nobody will take this issue seriously. There are like a handful of senators and representatives, they're all Republicans, who talk about this all the time because they don't want us going off the cliff. They don't want us to become completely unable to exist. But that's what's going to happen, and it's going to get worse. So Congress could right now pass his six-penny plan, and I'm not saying like that's the solution, but it is a solution. And I'd be fine with it, completely fine with it. And I wish they would address it. There's one other guy that I pulled some sound from here named David Schweikert from Arizona. He's a representative. And, you know, I'm kind of answering my own question here, because he talked about the way in which this will play out, not just in these big numbers, like here's how much we're in debt, here's how much we have, here's how much is coming in. He talked about in terms of big government programs, what's going to happen even to those programs. That's probably where you'll see it first.
This country needs 104% of that child's lifetime earnings just to pay the federal government pensions. I have a three-year-old. Our obligations right now require taking every dime my little Matthew will ever earn just to pay the federal government pensions. Part of this, Mr. Speaker, is the math of demographics. We don't have enough people. We don't have enough children. We are functionally at zero population growth. There is a mass that I had some of the heritage demographers in my office today. They have a model that says in the next few years, we could actually go negative in population as a country. And for some people, oh, yay, that's great, less traffic. Okay, you tell me how I'm going to finance Social Security. You tell me how I'm going to finance Medicare. In less than 6.5 years, the Social Security Trust Fund is empty. In less than 6.5 years, the Medicare Trust Fund is empty. And at that time, we double poverty of seniors. We will double the number of baby boomers who live on the street. That is the morality now of this place.
David Schweiker, a lot of pauses in there. Sorry about that. This is the way he speaks. But he is bringing up a real issue there that you're going to start to see. Like, how's it play out? Well, you're going to start seeing this kind of stuff. And they're going to just keep going into debt to fund it because it's the short-term fix. The politicians that are in there right now, they don't want long-term fixes because that hurts them personally. They want short-term fixes. But ultimately, it's us. We're the ones that have to be serious about it. If we aren't serious about it, they won't be. They just want to get in there, have their moment, get out, get their paycheck, live a nice life, maybe consolidate power for a long time. But ultimately, it's personal to most of them. They're not willing to do long-term big fixes to anything, no matter what, because we're not willing to elect people that will do that.
Wow. Wiggins America.
Does that make sense? It feels like a lot of what I'm doing, a lot of what conservative radio is doing, is just sounding the alarm on things. And it sucks because you don't want to just be negative, but you have to point this stuff out. I just don't know what's going to happen with the debt. I mean, I really, really hope that at some point we find this was supposed to be DOGE. You know, you had something come in that was supposed to be this miracle find, but we haven't found it yet. I'm not saying we can't. I'm just skeptical that we will. Do you feel that right now? Like, are you skeptical about some of the big things you were hoping to happen with either this administration or whatever, this time period that we're in? I'm not giving up on it yet. I'll say that. Like, of all the negative things that I could be saying right now and, like, things I'm bringing up, I'm going to say that I'm not giving up on some of those big things yet. And those things, you know what those are. I mean, we talk about them almost every week here. If you listen to Wiggins America, you can get the podcast. They are election integrity. They are the debt. You know, the big stuff. Those are two. I would say those are two of the biggest national security concerns that I have. And therefore, the show reflects that. We are going to take a short break and also give you, I think, another, you know, sort of important story. It's a little more personal, though. It's a story of somebody who is a friend of mine who passed away. I'm going to give you an update on that. I'm not sure. That probably is a weird tease. I'm going to give you an update on my friend who passed away. Well, there's some interesting news about it, so stick around. But I thought my voice would be better by now. I thought by the end of the show, after talking it through, it's actually, I think, gotten worse, a little more hoarse than it was. But anyway, still getting over being sick as well as the kidney stones. Refer back to the first segment if you want to know everything. I was coming in here to do this show and driving across the Stan Musial Bridge, and one of those guys who weaves in and out trying to drive faster than everybody came through, and I didn't catch that guy quick enough. You know, if I see him coming up behind me, tell me if you do this, because I would really like to know if I'm the only one, because I feel like kind of a jerk when I'm doing it, but I'm also doing it because the other person's being a jerk. I think, like, 90% of the time, I'm thinking that person's just being a jerk. They're causing danger. They're flying in out of everybody. And then there's 10% of the time, though, that I'm like, well, what if there's a real emergency? They're in emergency. They're trying to get somebody somewhere who's hurt or something. I feel kind of bad about that. But you got to know, 90% of the time, it's not that. So when they come up behind you, if you see them coming, do you ever get right next to the guy who's driving at speed limit in the left lane? Say there's two lanes. Do you ever get right next to somebody and go the exact same speed as them so that the person can't go around you? Now, depending on how crazy they're driving, I've actually seen people go on the shoulder around me before when I've done this. And I'm like, well, if it's an emergency, it's an emergency. I just don't know. You never know. You never know. But I always default to you're being an, you know what, that I can't say FCC. So I'm just wondering if anybody else does that. Or if you think that I'm doing the wrong thing by doing that. Because typically it's not somebody who's going so nuts. They're just riding your tail a little bit. They're bothering you. They're just making you mad. And then I'll definitely do it. Because I can tell that it's not an emergency. Anyway, that happened on the way in today. And I didn't see the person early enough, or else I probably would have done my typical thing. I didn't do it. I just watched them. And this was like somebody who's going real fast, like crazy fast. And it brought me back to a time when I was, this was probably mid-2000s. No, a little bit later than that. It would have been like 2010-ish. I was leaving, I was in the DePere area by the West County Mall. And there's like a side road that comes up onto a main road. It wasn't on an interstate, but just kind of a more main road, side road to main road. And there was an entrance ramp sort of thing where you yield to traffic. And to get onto the main road, you have to turn pretty hard. It's not like you sit at a stop sign and then you go right. You have to turn kind of gradually and then stop at that yield sign. And it's just not really designed that well. I don't know what a better design would be, but it's just a tough design because I've seen a lot of problems there. Well, one time I was coming onto that road and I watched the person in front of me start to go. Well, then I turned back to see what oncoming traffic was going to do so that I could go. In the meantime, I'm drifting ever so slowly forward, waiting for my turn to gun it into traffic. And I didn't realize that the person who I thought had been going stopped. They didn't go. And I ran into their back end, but I was going like 10 miles an hour. I was just like a scraped my front end. But it was my fault. I mean, they didn't do anything wrong. They just acted like they were going and then didn't. And then I turned and I didn't see that they hadn't gone. Okay. So that's the situation. So because of that, we had to file a police report because there was damage to both cars, mainly mine. And I had to go take a stupid driver's ed class when I'm like 30-something years old to teach me, here's how you messed up. And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But in that class that I had to take, they showed you all the different ways that people can be stupid when they're driving. And I'm like, of course, none of this applies to me. Let me out of here, ruining my Saturday. And one of them was, and I always stuck with me, the guy who weaves in and out of traffic. He goes in and out, and he causes danger to everybody. Well, it backfired, because when I saw that, they said, it saves a total over a 30-minute drive. If you're going to be weaving in and out and going nuts like that, it only would save you a total of 5 minutes. And I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. However, when I'm late, I think, oh, man, I got a 30-minute drive. If I weaved in and out of traffic, I could save 5 minutes. It really kind of backfired for me. I don't know about you. Anyway, here's what's more important.
Wiggins America.
Okay, a couple weeks ago, I shared this story, and it's a news story. It's a local news story now, or had been anyway, of a friend of mine who died in a car accident. I guess it's public, so her name is Cecily. Wonderful, wonderful woman. She was 36 years old. Well, she was actually about to turn 36. I think the next day after she died was her birthday. 4 kids. We were very close friends with that family. It did make local news, I think just because it was just such a young person. And you see that in a day, and then it goes away, and you go, oh, that's sad, and then it goes away. But when you know them, it's a big deal. And so we did know them. We do know them. We're still friends with the family, of course. Our boys, their boys are friends with our boys and our girl, all, you know, roughly the same age. And so they're playing together all the time. And my wife had been very close with her. When we found out that she was suddenly taken from the world and us, obviously very sad, but we heard a story through her husband, who we are also friends with, that I wanted, I said on the radio that I, you know, just be in prayer, and I shared their GoFundMe and all that stuff. But I said there was a portion of that story that I wasn't able to share yet. And I wanted to get his approval to share it. And so I did. I got his approval after talking to him. It took a little while. You know, it's sensitive. I don't want to just call and be like, hey, I want to talk about this on the radio. I was talking to him. You know, we were doing a meal train and stuff, and we were just talking about it. And I said, is it okay if I share this? Because I wanted to confirm the story with you. And he said, yeah, go ahead. So the story is this, and it gave me a lot of hope, and I think probably anybody who heard it, and that's why I'm sharing it, is there's a plan. The point of this is there's a plan, even with something so terrible. A weekend before, so she died on a Wednesday earlier this month. On the Friday before she died, she was taking a walk with her husband, and she was a very spiritual person, very, very tied in with the Holy Spirit in a way that I think some of us envy. And she said, I think, she just turned to him and she said, I think the Lord's going to take me home soon. And he was like, what? He didn't know what to do. They were just on a walk. And she just randomly said that. And I don't know if he said, I asked him more details and he said, I don't know. I didn't really know what to do with it. And I didn't really even think that much about it. I just thought, what are you talking about? And then they just kind of moved on. And he said, I wish that it would have been something that I didn't think about anymore, because now that I do, I know that it was a message that the Lord was giving her, that this was going to happen. And it has served to, I was pretty mad about, I can't imagine him, you know, even I, as just a friend, was mad, because I was like, why? Why her? Of all people, you could have stopped this, God. Why her? But in hearing that story, I've had to just sort of relent and say, I don't know what the plan is. And I don't know what your plan is for me always. I don't know what your plan is for the world. I don't know what it is for politics. But obviously you're involved. And it does give me peace to be able to have that little thing to hang my hat on. Ultimately, it's not about me, it's about them. But I'm thankful for something like that. And I just wanted to share that because it's something I have not stopped thinking about ever since. That there is a plan. And then we're all part of it. And he's got a plan each individually for us. And we can choose to follow that plan or we can choose to not. And this whole world is included in that plan. And there are a lot of people who are not following that plan. Doesn't mean it's off kilter, though. He's going to bring it all back, and he's got a big plan. Anyway, that is the end of Wiggins America this weekend. Thank you for listening, and I hope that you have gotten something out of this little hour that we share on the weekend.